This is London Real. I am Brian Rose. My guest today is Mickey Willis, the American independent filmmaker and director of the recent documentary feature film Plandemic Indoctrination. In May this year, at the height of the coronavirus lockdown, you published Plandemic, a 26-minute short film interviewing featuring Judy Mikovits. Soon after, the video went super viral and was banned by all major technology platforms for promoting, quote, widely debunked conspiracy theories about coronavirus. Yesterday, on August 18th, London Real world premiere live streamed your follow-up feature-length film, Plandemic Indoctrination, on our digital freedom platform. The movie was watched by 1.98 million unique viewers, giving us the world record for the biggest live stream broadcast of a documentary film in human history. Plandemic Indoctrination tracks a three-decade-long trail that follows the money and leads directly to the key players in the COVID-19 pandemic, unmasking major conflicts of interest with decision-makers that are managing that crisis. Mickey, welcome to London Real.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be here.
Hey, great to have you. Before we get started, I just want to announce that we are streaming this, too, on our new Digital Freedom platform, which is a censorship-free, independent broadcasting system that is of the people, by the people, for the people, and available exclusively on our website at freedomplatform.tv. Can everyone watching this now please share this link via the sidebar to any and all of your social media channels? Let me repeat that. Can everyone watching please share this now via the sidebar to any and all of your social media channels? This is important. Simply ask your friends and family to give us 15 minutes, and then they can decide. Mickey, I pledge to you and everyone watching us that none of this conversation will be edited, censored, removed, or banned, and that anyone in the world can watch the full version of this episode free at freedomplatform.tv/Willis. Thanks to the generous donations of over 36,000 people around the world that I affectionately call the London Real Army. For anybody wanting to become a founding member of the Digital Freedom Platform, they can visit freedomplatform.tv/give to donate and fight with us on the front lines to protect our human rights. Here at London Real, we've been a platform for free speech since 2011. And Mickey, I am pumped to talk to you today. Wow, we had a crazy day yesterday. How are you feeling after you drop your baby to the world, after working on this thing for, well, 3 months, but also you've been on this project for a long time? How are you feeling?
Well, after my first real night's sleep, I feel pretty good. The last 3 months have been sleepless and a lot of work for us to compress what would normally take 3 years, to which is a typical number to produce a documentary, full-length documentary, into 3 months was definitely, I give a lot of credit to my incredible team for being there and doing 14 to 16-hour days to make that possible. So in answer to your question, I'm doing great today. How are you doing, Brian?
Good, man. You know, we got a great team here, and I'm just so impressed with the work you put in. I mean, all of the details to make this 75-minute film, you know, there's so much work going on behind the scenes with, and you're an incredible filmmaker, Mickey, really. It's no joke what you do. We've made our share of feature films here, but to watch you work, it's really inspiring. I think you're a great storyteller. Visually, it's an amazing movie. I got to watch it Friday morning, and me and my chief strategy officer, we were like, uh-oh, this is going to make waves. So just super excited. You know, I wanted to bring everybody up to speed on the last 24 hours, kind of what happened yesterday. And then I'd love to go in with you and hear your reactions to the reactions of the film, and then maybe get you to talk about how you came up with the ideas in this film, because they're pretty revolutionary and very different than the first short.
So, let me jump into that.
Look, for the background, you and I first started talking, I think, about three, four months ago, we got introduced by, I think, Dr. Rashid Buttar. I had watched the first short on Plandemic and was really impressed. We had a great conversation. You know, we had Judy Mikovits on the show, and you're like, Brian, I'm working on this major documentary. And we thought, wow, when it's finished, maybe we can collaborate. It was really early in the Digital Freedom Platform. I think we had only streamed a few things. And then I got contacted last week by Eric, one of your producers, and he was like, Brian, we're ready. And I was like, oh my gosh. And we literally put everything together in a matter of days. My tech team here upgraded everything, all of our physical servers. We went all to these whole Cloudflare pieces, all these redundancies, because we really thought this was going to tax our technology, and it did. Yesterday, we had multiple brute force attacks on our site. Matter of fact, right before I sat down in the chair, my tech guy just said, we're getting attacked again right now to try to take the site down. I don't know if it's because you're on, Mickey, or because they're just making a second attempt at Plandemic. But again, we're ready for that. Yesterday, all of our ads were simultaneously banned on Google. Facebook banned the URL, freedomplatform.tv. So everybody trying to share the episode during the live stream couldn't do it. All of our posts were taken down as well. Instagram shadow banned everything for fact checking. I couldn't post anything with text on it. LinkedIn took down my personal account that day, and I had a call with YouTube and basically said, you're one upload away from being completely deplatformed. They're like, you don't get another strike, Brian. You're just going to be gone. So that was just our day over here. We woke up this morning and we were suspended on Twitter as well. So, but you know, it's all good, Mickey. This is the price of putting out content that is censored by the platforms. A few headline numbers. We just got the Google Analytics, and we have 1.98 million unique people watching this thing during the stream yesterday, which is a record for us and a record we checked for any documentary stream. So congratulations to you. In addition to that, the download link on our website that's now been shared elsewhere, we've seen 300,000 downloads of the full movie from that alone, and our page has been shared over 250,000 times. So I think it's just getting warmed up as we speak. Everybody loves the movie. The critics are all giving it 0 out of 5 stars. I've never seen such a difference. And the most fascinating thing, Mickey, is it's the mainstream journalists that yesterday seemed to be flagging this to the tech platforms. And we saw the same thing happen with us, where mainstream media is like they're actually censoring the tech platforms. And maybe you can talk more about that. So those are some of the top line numbers. It was crazy here yesterday, but we woke up today with a few bruises. We're nursing our wounds and we're kind of back. How has the reaction been for you, and how has this felt watching all this happen?
Well, it's been incredible, Brian. The reaction has been very positive across the board. And as you said, it's only the fact checkers and the faux journalists who seem to not get it, but they're paid to not get it, so we understand. But this whole ride has been really incredible. It's been everything you can imagine, and I'm sure that you can imagine because you've been on a very similar roller coaster ride. You know, when you get out there in this environment of censorship and draconian laws that are being enforced on all of us, and you do your best to tell any kind of truth that you know collides at all with the mainstream narrative, the attacks are fierce, and it really has been a wake-up call for me to realize just how deeply into this hypnotic state we all are as a result of decades of propaganda being forced at us. And so it's been, you know, it's the support has been incredible. You learn who your friends are, as I'm sure you know. But the unfounded attacks, to watch the media spin things, to watch them find a video of me playing with my children and somehow make it something negative, you know, to try to find everything just to make people not like me, the character, or not like Dr. Mikovits, the character. It's really about character assassination. It's a very dirty game that they're playing. And so that part of it, it's not that I didn't know that it was there, but to really be at the brunt of it and have all the major networks working to convince the world that I am someone that I'm not, and that Judy Mikovits is someone that she's not, has been a very interesting thing to witness unfolding. But it only gives me more determination to keep fighting this fight. And the more they expose themselves, the better I understand the game, and I think the better we all get at playing the game.
What was the
hardest point in the past 3 months when you were making this film? Was there a time where you were like, man, like this is so hard, or I'm getting attacked, or, you know, I don't know if we can make it, or what were some of those moments?
Well, you know, I think it was day 2 or 3 after Plandemic 1 went viral, and I woke up one morning and had this flash that it was all a dream, and I felt a great relief. And then as reality set in and I realized, oh no, I actually have to turn my phone on and to feel this next wave of global hate. It was tough. Like I didn't want to get out of bed. I had an emotional release at that moment. And I really had to come to terms with, you know, the, it's kind of like the old fable of, you know, the devil in the crossroads. You know, I had the choice at that moment to stay on my path and to keep going, or to just bow out and take a turn. And I really knew that it was possible for me. It would have been easy for me to lay low at that point and then say, you know, oops, let's just move on and go someplace else, because it's too scary to be at the forefront of such rage. And I had to really get clear with myself that this is bigger than me. It has nothing to do with me, really. This is something that I've been aware of for years. And if there's a window that's opening right now where we can all finally yell something to the world, let's yell something that does us all some good. Because what's been being yelled at us has put us into this position of really not understanding what it takes to maintain our health and our freedom. And the fact that the media has done such a good job at weaponizing our language, such that now when anyone fights for freedom, it's suddenly a far-right Nazi, you know, chant. And it's like that kind of weaponization, and to be accused of you know, being part of groups or receiving money from groups that I have no affiliation with whatsoever, it just, you know, gave me a deeper sense of how fierce this fight is. And I had to come to terms with it. You know, is this something that I want to do? Because it's kind of too late now. I have no choice. But, you know, the answer came clear to me. It's like, this is what I was born for. I'm not going to be stopped, just like you and all of your people that are part of your platform. We just can't be. It's too vulnerable of a moment right now on this planet. And, you know, if we don't wake up now and embrace the unbelievable, and that's really what it requires, is because what's happening is so unbelievable that the cognitive dissonance just, it triggers people to just want to crawl back in their holes and believe the same false narrative that we've been living under for so long. But we can't anymore, because we won't survive this narrative. We have to expand our awareness beyond the lies that have been forced at us for so long, or we really won't survive as a species. So it and then, you know, my children are my main factor for me. It's, you know, if I were a single man and I didn't have such a wonderful wife and two small children, it's possible that I may make easier choices, you know, but right now I don't feel like I have a choice, because I've seen too much, and all of the evidence points in one direction. And so it's just time for us all to step up and do the one thing that I think is become tough for us, and that is be willing to be unliked. You know, we live in this era of social media where it's all about likes and accumulating, you know, tribe agreement. And we just have to step out of that crap and just be willing to not be liked and to not be in agreement with even people that we love the most, and stand in our truth, but to do it in an educated way, you know, with data behind us, with real research behind us. And therein lies the problem, because where do people find truth these days? And I'm sure we'll get into that.
And you go deep into that on the film, and I want to talk about those things. How important was it for you to get this thing out as soon as possible? Because, you know, we got it out in August, but, you know, as a filmmaker, you must be at this dilemma thinking, man, if I had three more months. But also you're thinking that the world can't wait three more months for this information, because this film could literally change the course of history. It could change the course of public policy, of public action. So how do you weigh those two factors?
Yes, it's a great question, because we actually made a pretty extreme pivot during the production of part two. And that was, we set out to release something immediately after part one. And I did 30 interviews with top doctors. Rashid Buttar was one of them. Among a lot of other very notable professors and Nobel laureates. And, you know, it became clear as we watched the world kind of devolve into this battle of these hot button topics, you know, the mask and social distancing. Understanding the game, I took a step back and I said, I don't know that we want to get into this fight at all, because there's no winning this fight. It's designed to just further divide us. The more data we show, the more data they show. The more they go back and correct search engines and change history, such that it just leaves the people battled and divided. And so I didn't want to cause more of that. And I didn't want to be involved in a game that is just unwinnable. And so we made the decision after we did all these interviews, we made the decision to leave out all of that, because it became clear as we started to analyze all of the fact checkers, all of the debunkers, that they were avoiding the key issues, that the revelations that were spoken by Dr. Michalowicz regarding conflict of interest, regarding patents, regarding the money trail. And they, no one addressed these issues. And that's the game. You know, they say, look at this, just like a magician, look at this over here while this hand is doing this. And so, you know, we just said, no, let's look at the trick hand, only the trick hand. And so we made a pivot that required us to kind of scrap all of our interviews, start over, and to hold this diligent line of let's only focus on what they're trying to hide most from the people. And so that took extra time. So there was this sense of, well, you know, how much longer can we go before we release this, before, you know, the subject, the narrative changes out there, or before the world shifts to some new false flag, crazy situation. Let's get it out there. And so there was a great deal of pressure for us to get it out. At the same time, credit to my team, that everyone was mostly concerned with telling the full story. And the full story had to contain the exposing the game of the media and the fact checkers and all of that, because we knew that no matter what we put out there, that people are going to come back and say, well, Snopes discredited it, so it's, I guess we can turn away now. And with that kind of those firewalls set up in advance, there's nothing you can do out there unless people understand that those firewalls, who owns them, who pays for them, and what they really are, they have nothing to do with fact-checking. As I say in the film, they're political spin machines.
Yeah, well, that's a bold decision as a filmmaker to scrap a direction you're going in when you got all that stuff in the can and you have time pressure. Like, that's a seriously bold decision. And, you know, to make that kind of 180-degree turn and say, yeah, let's go after the hand they're not looking at. And for people that haven't seen the film, first of all, they need to go watch it. And then they'll see that from what seems to me is it's something you try to create that's airtight and bulletproof. Like, everything here is fact-checkable, you know? It's like, follow this and look at this money, and you're literally reading off documents on the piece. So, like you said, it's very hard for them to try to character assassinate, dispute these things, because it's very factual. Now, it'll be interesting. I'm sure they'll find ways over the next couple days. But I'm guessing that was your intention, to make it to where it was really bulletproof as a piece, and they couldn't try to take something from here or there and try to assassinate the piece, kind of the way they would character assassinate a person, almost like character assassinate the film.
I was collaborating with over 20 investigators, top researchers, and about 20 doctors that were our ongoing resources that, you know, email threads went around, circulated daily. So every new point that would come up, I would put it in the group and say, poke holes in this, show me where this is wrong. And the points that we could not ourselves prove wrong are the ones that made it into the film. And so they're going to have a really hard time. They're trying. If you saw Politico's, which I have a little piece that I'll read in a minute, but if you saw Politico's attempted hit piece, you know, it's really a joke, especially if you read the whole thing, you really get the sense of how they play the game. You know, they change little words as if, you know, I made a statement that I didn't make, and they debunk a statement that people don't remember whether I made it or not. It's an hour and a half film. They don't know if I said it or not, but they'll actually, based upon a fictional statement, they will then, determine that a claim is inaccurate. And we can go line by line through the political thing and just expose them for what they are, because this is another group that is often funded by Bill Gates and all of the big pharma allies. And so they're ready. They probably had this pre-written. But the funny part of it is they actually said they reached out to you and I, and we didn't respond. And this thing came out immediately after it showed. And so at what point would we have had time to respond to them, right? So that's just all in a way to make it seem shady that we are avoiding their challenge.
Yeah, very much. And I want to go through this and talk about the structure of the film for sure. It was interesting because Facebook banned the URL for the film as being inaccurate and all this COVID stuff, but the film was still streaming at the time. So, like, how do you ban something if it's not even out yet? It was pretty crazy. And before we just jump into the movie, I know after the first short piece, you must have had lots of people contact you that want to give you money and produce the next film and all sorts of stuff. But I think you made a decision, again, a very difficult decision, Mickey, to keep this independent, to keep this your project, and also to release this to the world. You know, you didn't have to give it away. You basically gave this film away yesterday. You know, you let us live stream it for free. You put it out on all the different sites for sharing. I mean, those are two strong, important decisions. Can you walk us through the logic? And then I'd love to get into the movie.
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because that's definitely a point of contention that people have used to try to smear myself and my team. And the reality is that early on with part one, right when it was at its peak of virality, I was contacted by a group through a very good friend who holds the record for the largest single day crowdfunding raise ever. I think it's $26 million. And this person guaranteed me that they would crush their record for Plandemic 2. And, you know, after three or four phone calls and after really sitting with this and realizing that this could bring in a great deal of money and resources to allow us to do bigger and better work in the world, we're not in it for that. And I had to make the tough phone call of calling this person back after they had actually created, you know, graphics for us and built a landing page and all kinds of stuff. And I had to say that I've changed my mind and we can't do it. And they were blown away. And they said, well, why? And I said, well, it's the optics. We have a window of opportunity to do something here that affects all of our lives, all of our health, and all of our freedom. And right now they're looking for any excuse to connect me with some neo-Nazi organization or some, you know, greedy intention, you know, and I think it's something that we can't do right now. And it's also having, you know, I've been in media for over 30 years, and I've watched a lot of companies that I've been part of, a lot of very good friends have that moment when and again, it kind of goes back to that fable of the devil in the crossroads, where that smiling suit walks in with this, you know, offer of infusion of a lot of money, and they're posing as angel investors, and it feels to anyone who's ever run a company, you know, when money comes at you like that, it's a hard thing to turn away, because, you know, typically you're running on the edge, on fumes. And so the feeling of relief that comes with, wow, we could just, you know, we could just sell it at this point or let this person buy in and have a much easier go moving forward is a temptation that I understand. It comes with relief, the feeling of relief. And I had to really check myself and say, you know, is that going to change things on our end? And how will that affect this? And could that be the thing that literally gives them the ammunition they need to shut us down for good? And so I just decided not to take it. And we haven't turned on one ad. I mean, imagine how many the you know, Plandemic 1 got over 1 billion views, and we didn't turn on one ad for one commercial. And we could have done that and made thousands of dollars. And we chose not to, because it's about getting it to the people. And since then, we've had distribution offers. We've had, as you can imagine, when anything gets this kind of attention, they come out of the woodworks. And we've turned down every single offer, just because we understand what it will look like, the optics in the world, and also for our own morals and our own principles that we stand upon. You know, it's just not what we're doing this for. And I think there's been a lot of great missions. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of people that are now involved in the stuff that we're uncovering in part two, I think a lot of them actually began with benevolent missions and somehow got trapped into the game so far, like so many politicians do. They get trapped into the game so deeply that they can't get out, and it's soul killing. And, you know, it's just, as a father, I just can't let my soul go and then do my best to try to raise two kids as a soulless, empty being. And so I look at that and just move becomes clear to me that we just had to say no.
Wow, there's that expression that life imitates art, and then maybe art imitates life. So it's interesting when you're making this movie, and I appreciate you saying that these people don't start off necessarily with bad intentions. Maybe they do want to change the world, but then they have that kind of come to Jesus moment where you got a big check. This isn't like necessarily a 7-figure check. This is like an 8 or 9-figure check or a big amount of power. And they make a decision. I mean, you got to study these people's lives. So for you to kind of see that and in a weird way kind of meta learn on the fly, I mean, still though, that's powerful that you did that. So, and again, I think it's really important though for the purity of this message for people to know that. I appreciate you explaining that to us. Let's talk about the film. Maybe for people that don't know it or need a reminder, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the structure or some of the things you talk about, and then maybe we can talk about some of the criticism or what you're expecting coming down the pike going forward.
Yeah, well, where would you like to start on that one?
Maybe the structure of the film, because, again, maybe it's important. I mean, maybe we should just cover this now. I mean, the first short that, maybe we call Plandemic One, that 26-minute kind of interview with Judy and the piece around it. I mean, maybe just a quick history on that, because, maybe tell us how you got roped into this whole process, and then maybe talk about how you pivoted and then came into this final iteration.
Wonderful. So I met Judy through a very good friend named Dr. Lori about 2 years ago. She brought her into my office to meet, and she said, "You have to hear this woman's story. It might make a good movie someday." It was kind of that kind of a meeting. And so I sat down, I listened to Judy's story. And I got her intention was so pure, so clear, that she didn't care about anything other than just getting her story out to the world. She was give it away. And I really tested her with a lot of tough questions, and I have a great bullshit meter. And so I looked into her eyes and I listened to her, and I was moved by her story, and I could see the damage that had been done to this brilliant woman. If you just stop for a moment and listen to her, some of the things that she's been criticized for, because she's not a perfect being like all of us, and she doesn't always say the perfect words, and she's a little rough around the edges. And some of that may have to do with the fact that she has been dragged through hell for the past decade plus. And I witnessed in this woman the pain and the damage that has been done. And I saw nothing but truth in her eyes and heard nothing but truth in her words. And it stuck with me. And at the time, I wasn't interested in making a movie about her story, but her, that experience was stayed with me. And so when the pandemic first occurred, I had a meeting with Judy set up, and I sat down with her because I really wanted to learn, I want to know what's going on from your point of view. I was very impressed by her knowledge and wisdom that I experienced on our first meeting, and I had seen her a couple times since then, and really got a sense that she's a brilliant woman. And so I wanted to meet with her and find out what was going on. And as we sat down, it became clear to me that I wish I had my camera with me, because it was just what was coming through her was so important, and I thought the world really deserves to know this. So I said, "Would you, consider coming to my office and sit down, and we'll just make a little interview, and I'll cut it together, and I'll put it out online." And it was halfway through the interview with her that I was involved in another movie called The Narrative, which was to really do what a lot of Plandemic did, which was expose the media and who controls the global narrative. And I was already deep, probably 18 months into that project, working with a lot of whistleblowers. And I just knew during the interview with Judy, I said, this is more important right now than the narrative, because it's urgent and it's happening to all of us right now. And I made my decision in my head in that moment that the narrative was going to be pushed aside and we were going to create something to really expose this pandemic. And that's where it started. And then as we started to, edit her interview, of course, there's no way that we could have predicted the extent of its virality and what it did. If I knew that, I certainly would have put a lot more verifying sources and counter interviews in the interview. But for me, it was just really a way to get her story out there and to honor a woman who has been incredibly smeared, wrongfully, punished in the court of public opinion. And so that's kind of where it started. And then, of course, after it went viral, which, is wonderful because one of the best comments, ones that I appreciate the most that I've received from dozens of doctors is I've probably had a dozen or 15 doctors say, thank you for giving us a voice. And there's nothing that feels better than that. Because when these doctors break down for me, the stranglehold that they've been under forever, and the way they express the pain they feel for being unable to serve their oath to do no harm, and that they may see that restored within their lifetime, to feel that feeling is probably the greatest reward that my team and I have experienced through this process.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean,
that must feel so refreshing. I just had a flashback. I mean, in my second conversation with Dr. Rashid Buttar, he said, Brian, I want to invite, 100 doctors onto the Zoom call and we're going to stream it live. And I was like, okay, it's a crazy idea, but okay. And it was funny because he started making statements, a lot of the same statements that you've made in your movies. And he said, how many doctors agree with this? And you saw all these hands go up and you saw all of their faces change. And they were saying, wow, I didn't know there were so many of us out there because I'm not allowed to talk about this stuff. I feel like I can't talk about this stuff. And when they started to see how many doctors actually felt the same way, it was almost like they had this relief, like I'm not alone. And so yeah. I think it is important that you put these messages out there. That must be an amazing feeling. And so that went viral. And then, like you said, you were going to continue down, I think, a little bit more down that road, and you decided to do that 180 narrative. And so talk about indoctrination, because it is this follow the money concept, but also explores a little bit about the media and the narrative stuff, which you're a specialist in. And that's something that in our first phone call, I remember, I was like, wow, you really have a lot of knowledge of how the whole history of how the media has been co-opted by the government. And you weave that into this film, and it's a great perspective. So maybe you can speak on that a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. It's something I kind of fell into just in my, I'll back up a little bit. And there was a defining moment in my life. I was actually near the World Trade Center when it was attacked in 2001. And me and a buddy went to the scene and dug for, did search and rescue, really became body recovery for 3 days. And the experience of being in a environment of that magnitude, that tragic magnitude, was something that definitely is a wake-up call. But the thing that happened for me really on about day 2.5 was the witnessing of 2,000 men and women who had already been told, we'd been advised that the air that we were breathing was incredibly toxic and would likely cause health issues in the future. And it did for a lot of people. And to see that when that announcement was made, not one person left, because there was still a chance that one human life could be saved. We were, in elevator shafts, pulling out bodies, and at the very slight chance that one life could be saved, all of these people risked their lives, their healthy bodies. And when I saw that, it shook me to the core, because at that point I was pursuing a very typical Hollywood career. I wanted the fame, I wanted the power, I wanted to be known. And it just really had me re-examine as I watched, earth-moving vehicles plow through $200,000 cars that were parked on Wall Street just to get to, the point of rescue for people, and realize how quick the material world it means nothing. Two monolithic structures now are dust at our feet, and all of these beautiful cars being flipped and demolished and symphonies of car alarms going off. There was a moment that I just stood back and had to re-examine the material world and everything that I thought was important. And so that created something in me. And I came back to Hollywood. And then that was my first glimpse at witnessing how inaccurate the media was reporting something that I had just experienced. Nothing was on point. When they said, you know, the Red Cross arrived, just little details. They either had it terribly wrong or they were pushing a narrative for some other agenda, and I couldn't figure it out. I was just intrigued that they could be so misinformed. The major media, all they had to do is ask somebody like myself that was there, and they could get the actual, you know, progression of events, and they weren't concerned with that for some reason, and I thought it was fascinating. And so I started to really pay attention to the media from that point on. But when I returned to Hollywood, I found myself, at the time I had a very lucrative career as a music video director. And I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, I had offers. The labels started calling again once 9/11, you know, the flames 9/11 went down. And I found myself saying, what is the song about and what is the concept about? And then it was just like, why, what does this do in the world? It's entertainment, but do we need more entertainment right now? I mean, it serves a great purpose, but I also started to see it at the point that it crosses the line to become a distraction, where we're not actually engaged in all the things within our world and our local communities that we should actually pay more attention to. And so I just said, I don't want to participate in this game anymore. And it seems to be the only offering that Hollywood has for me. And so I'm out. And I moved, put everything I had in storage, and I went to live on a producer friend of mine had a guest house on a vineyard in Napa Valley. And I was hired to actually write the sequel to an iconic movie. And so I had enough money to survive for a year and just rethink and reinvent what the hell I want to do with myself and my life. And everything changed within that process. And so I created a global film challenge called Elevate Film Festival, which was really challenging filmmakers all over the world to find, to show us what's right with their area, wherever they live, their domain. What's right with it? What's the good news? Who are the heroes? What are the new technologies that we all need to know about? Because we don't get to see any of this stuff on the news. It's just always, it just features the worst side of humanity. Let's feature the good side of humanity, because there's so much more good than there is negative. But it doesn't look that way if your only window to the world is a little screen. And so we just started at that time, let's do our best as a media company to focus our lens on the good stuff of the world and the good people of the world, and just do our best. At least we'll die knowing that we tried. And that is the thing that has evolved into what we're doing now. And it's just gradually, I avoided politics my entire life. I wanted nothing to do with it. And then I suddenly end up on the road with Bernie Sanders and documenting his campaign. And it was the moment Dorothy saw behind the curtain. You know, it was Toto pulls back the curtain, and I'm suddenly have this backstage pass to all of the debates, and I'm meeting all of the candidates, and I'm realizing that this is at the crux, this thing that we call politics is at the crux of everything that's wrong in our world right now.
Wow, man.
Sounds like you got a few more movies left in you, for sure, Mickey. But it's interesting because I can now see a lot of this in your films. You know, it's there. It's because your whole personality is in these things. And now I can see more now that I even learned more about you. And so, obviously, pieces of this are in this narrative. You start off with this new character we've never met before, and again, you start with this kind of, you know, follow the money, follow the facts narrative, and again, you kind of then briefly go into search engines, technology, history of media being co-opted, and then you kind of finish off with a lot of the key players. Maybe you can talk about, you know, what's actually going on, who's the gentleman in the bow tie, and then also, what is Politico saying so far about some of the points you made?
Well, the gentleman in the bow tie is Dr. David Martin, and he's now become a great friend. And I can't say enough about this man. We met simply, I had several people reach out to me, say, you have to interview this guy as part of the next pandemic. And after we flew him in, sat down and met, I realized that this has to be the spine of the next project, because it's he had information, and I will be very transparent to say that there was a moment when we doubted him, because everything was such a bombshell that he had to share, that there was a moment when, after we did the interview, that we all sat down and we said, I don't know. You know, we need to, before we even start cutting this stuff, we need to really research who this guy is. And we need to look at every claim he made, because these things are, can they be so true? If they are, this is a bombshell. And wouldn't more people be talking about this? I mean, these are public records, and why isn't this on the front page of everything? And so we actually, there was a moment, which is a healthy thing to do, that skepticism, you know, we all were skeptic about David Martin. And so we put a dozen people on it, and they all came back and said, he's legit. And everything that he said, we cannot find. We find a discrepancy. He said, 99 when the date was 98. Just a little discrepancy in a number here and there. He mispronounced the Global Health Forum or whatever it is. You know, just mispronounced a couple things. But other than that, this is real. And we need to take everything that this man said very seriously. And so we did. And I'm glad that we did. He has proven to be a very humble and well-intended person that simply cares about the state of our country and the state of our world. And to jump to your other question, you know, the structure of the film, and it, as most documentaries do, they create themselves. Unless you're just, you know, set on a particular story and you've storyboarded ahead of time, a lot of documentaries begin with an interview or two and then they just expand. And that's what happened with this one. Every time we got to a point, we kept asking ourselves, we'd step out and say, if I knew nothing about this, and I was already skeptical, if I all I knew about Mickey Willis and Plandemic and Dr. Judy Mikovits is what I've heard from the media and the fact checkers, what would I think about this new claim they're making? And that would drive us then to go, well, then we better find some documentation and we better highlight it right there in real time. We better expose the fact checkers, because one of the most frustrating things, especially as a researcher and for any truth teller in the world, is when you know the truth about an organization like Snopes, and then you have people trying to debunk, you know, world-renowned double PhD virologists with these people who are simply running a website and don't live up to, you know, any personal morals that you would think would come with somebody who has been given the responsibility and the honor of being the arbiters of truth in the world. You think that they would at least live that way themselves, you know, and the founders of Snopes have done anything but. And so, you know, you have to understand, if they're going to come after my character and Judy's character and your character and everyone else, then it's time that they fill a little bit of their own medicine, you know, and that people start to look at their character. And we all have skeletons. We're not perfect. We all done embarrassing things. And if we want to put a spotlight and a magnifying glass on just those things, well, then any of us can look bad, you know, but who are we now? Because who I was 15 years ago, it's funny because a lot of the media would say former model. And it's like, I modeled for a year and a half at 19 years old, you know, but they choose those labels because it comes with a judgment. How can this person be smart if they're a model? You know, it's that kind of a thing. So they use these smears to just set up the dialogue so that everyone experiences us through the filter of a preconceived judgment. And this kind of psychological manipulation and the way that our language is being weaponized is the thing that became clear. Like, if we don't expose this in part two, all we're going to do is be at the forefront of greater attacks, greater character assassinations. And we need to find a way to overcome this, or at least educate the people to understand that this is what the game they play. You know, like that clip of Nancy Pelosi that we put in the film, where she literally said, you know, on all fairness, she was saying that this is what the Republicans do. But the truth is, this is what they all do. You know, she said, we smear someone when we don't like them, and then we merchandise the smear, and then the press writes about it, and then everyone believes it, and we all merchandise it. You know, and it's like, yeah, that's, thank you, Nancy, for sharing such truth, because this is what the people need to know to at least, at the very least, make an informed decision about the course of their own lives.
Yeah, it's a
powerful moment. And then when you start to get people to really think about this concept that you talk about, which is controlling the narrative, controlling the narrative, controlling the narrative. It's weird because it's kind of a meta thing. It's hard. It's when you're listening to the narrative or you're part of the narrative, it's hard to step outside and see that narrative. But like when you show like Nancy doing that, when you show how kind of one piece gets then echoed into a bunch of other pieces, and then the search engines collate all of those, and then you believe it. You know, and when you go back into the, I think it was the Mockingbird trials or something I had never heard of, where there was history of, you know, the government sending the CIA agents into the media, and most things that most people would have never known about, they always think are just crazy conspiracy theories. But it's nice that you kind of highlight those. So you kind of set the stage. You're saying, okay, before we get into it, understand that what you think is reality is not reality. And I'm really glad you did that, because like you said, if you had just gone down and interviewed 30 of the doctors, they would have come at you with the same way. They always deconstruct what you're doing. So it's very kind of meta what you're doing here. I hope people grasp it. They might need to watch the movie a few times.
Yeah, I definitely had to watch it a few times to get it. But I appreciate you bringing it to light, because that is exactly what our intention was, to as the story's unfolding, to be aware at least of the trigger points and to address them as we go. And hopefully we did a thorough job of that, because the thing that you mentioned was Operation Mockingbird. And that's something that I've been aware of for years, and I actually watered that down a great deal. I didn't want to, because it's one of the most intriguing. I really encourage people to go check it out. It's not a new revelation. It's been out and exposed since the 70s. But when you understand the depth of what the agencies like the CIA have done within the realm of media, it's shocking. And the reason I had to water it down was everything has been so weaponized that when you start talking about the CIA, just that in itself starts to trigger people into that world of the dark and conspiracy theory world. And so, you know, I tried to minimize every mention of the CIA, but the truth of the matter is, I mean, this is a very disclosed court case that they got caught buying and literally putting under contract over 3,000 journalists in America. And when you understand that, just the implications of that, that then, you know, they would then feed them whatever needed to be said to get Americans to support the move into war. And that's mostly what it was about in those ages, was just to get people to say, yes, let's bomb that country. Let's create that regime change, whatever it might be. And the CIA was controlling these people. Well, nowadays, how much of the CIA is involved deeply in the media? I really don't know that answer. But I do know that Big Pharma owns the media. And so, you know, when you understand the amount of money that, you know, Big Pharma is the largest lobbyist on Capitol Hill, over twice the amount as Big Oil. Like, let that sink in for a moment. You know, they own these people. They won't say anything against their narrative. And when you understand the amount of politicians and people who move from board to board, and that the names that have went from media to boards of the biggest manufacturers of vaccines and pharmaceuticals in the world, I mean, it is such an incestuous cesspool of corruption that these people have just, they're stuck in it at this point. And I left a lot of that stuff out because, you know, I wanted to really focus on corruption and the money trail of one subject. But believe me, the next film will address all of that.
Yeah, I'm assuming
you had a lot of ammo that you didn't use. Well, because first of all, you don't want the movie to be too long, and you wanted to keep it, you know, so bulletproof. And I appreciate you doing that. You know, there's a compelling part as you get towards the mid to the end part of the movie where you start going into the conflicts of interest in these agencies and some of the members and some of these pharmaceutical companies and the vaccine companies. And again, it's as I said to the audience in a bunch of my vlogs this week, it's like you basically connected the dots on much of what has been said here on the Digital Freedom Platform for the past 4 months. The problem is, Mickey, is that say you buy into this narrative, and yet your parents think you're crazy, your coworkers think you're crazy, and they're like, okay, well, explain it to me. And you're like, well, go watch Judy when she says this, and go watch Rashid in 1 hour, 20 minutes, and go watch Robert F. Kennedy talk about this. And everyone's like, I don't have too much time. And what you do in the movie, in literally like a 12-minute period here or a 16-minute period here, is it's just like bam, 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 and you really see it all come together, which is why it's so important. And again, it's done in a compelling, believable, fact-proof manner, and that's why it's a critical piece of work. But for me, the real powerful part was that Mike Wallace interview, the 60 Minutes, where he's going head-to-head against the guy and really putting him to task about whether a vaccine should have been used and whether it was safe. And, you know, I remember Mike Wallace because I'm showing my age, but, you know, really to see that was something really visceral, where you had an investigative journalist who's got a ton of credibility asking a hard question to someone who's not answering it. And you're like, wow, if this happened here, what else could it happen? And then you go big into the agencies and Fauci's and Gates, and you go big on this. So if people haven't seen the movie, go watch it. You know, how did you decide that that's how you wanted to kind of finish off with the movie? Because, again, you go really big there at the end.
Well, again, that was just, you know, organically, we had some bullet points on our whiteboard of subjects that we wanted to make sure and cover. And thankfully, Dr. David Martin is so articulate that through the course of our, what was ultimately about a 4.5-hour interview that we did, he mentioned all of our bullet points. And so, you know, at the moment that he mentions the CDC, we found a prime opportunity to then cut away to some of the history of the CDC. And again, just in respect for not wanting the film to be 3 hours long, we had to leave out a lot. But we just showed, you know, three different decades of examples of where the CDC has blatantly lied. And you can see that the man that you were referring to was the director of the CDC, who had internal knowledge ahead of time that the vaccines that they were distributing were causing harm. And people within the CDC had talked about it, and they had all discussed it, and then they went ahead and let the trials happen. And, you know, $4 billion in lawsuits from American citizens after they had been harmed by the vaccine. And everyone forgets about this. And it's amazing to me, like that is one of the things that I'm still perplexed by, is our short-term memory. And thankfully, there are some people that are old enough to have lived through all of it that remember, and they're out online sharing what they remember, because these things all happen, but it seems every 10 or 20 years they happen again, and everyone forgets, you know, what took place the first time. And so when you understand just the Center for Disease and Disease Control, when you understand that agency, major agency, as well as the FDA, the WHO, these agencies that have been charged with the responsibility of governing our global well-being, when you understand that they have fraudulent, dirty players running them, in terms of the WHO, a person who was part of a terrorist organization, who was already accused of covering up three pandemics. And somehow this was the person that they being the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, and other large, powerful groups, including the Communist Party of China, decided was the perfect person to run the World Health Organization. And he's not even a medical doctor. When you look at the absurdity of these things, you just have to ask, how did this happen? And how did we let this happen? And why aren't we more involved in this? Well, because we're distracted by things. And so it's, you know, I wanted to let the world know that these are the people that we're listening to right now. Everyone is following the direction of these organizations. And if you got to know the people that are running them, that are writing the narrative, and who have paid them, what they're paid to say and not say, I don't think that we put our lives in their hands.
For me,
it's still unfathomable the conflict of interest that exists between the agencies that are government appointed or these global agencies, and the fact that there's money to be made by the players there. I mean, it just boggles my mind. I still remember when Robert F. Kennedy Jr. started dropping that on my live episode on the Freedom Platform, and I was like, what? What? Yeah. Because here I was, you know, this science guy with an engineering degree thinking vaccines are proven science and they're great. And, you know, in theory, they could work, but to realize how they're co-opted and how it's all become very corrupt and dirty and all these, I just couldn't believe he was reciting these facts to me. And when you lay them out, it's just hard to imagine that someone like Gates or Fauci, or like you said, the director of the WHO, or even the CDC have financial interests in the same vaccines they are potentially mandating us to take. Again, it's so hard to believe. And again, most people just don't believe it. And they throw the anti-vaxxer at you, which, I mean, it just works so well. They got that word down, you know, that and the denier word.
Anti-vax, all these labels.
I mean, they've already thrown that in the articles today.
You and I guess us, you know, in concert. But it's just like, and I must say, it's a word that they've co-opted very well, because
Let's clarify that point, Brian.
Let's do that.
Real clear here. So I am not an anti-vaxxer. I'm having a lot of doctors as friends. I have a lot of reverence for medicine in Western medicine. I have had knee replacements. I have, you know, left surgeries grateful for the invention of medicine. And I also understand that in our harsh environment and our toxic world, the more we pollute it, the more things like vaccines, the more needed they may be. And the concept itself of having a medicine that can strengthen our body to be able to endure our toxic environment is a noble thing. And this is the best way I explained this to a doctor who had also, that I had interviewed, who had said the same thing about, you know, assuming that I was anti-vax. This doctor was anti-vax, and I said, I'm actually not. And I explained it this way. I said, we're talking about, you know, both of us being fathers. And I said, how much fast food do your children eat? He had young children. And he said, oh, none, really. I said, why is that? He said, why don't my kids eat fast food? He said, well, it's not food, for one thing, and their growing bodies need real food. Simple as that. It's just packed with chemicals and harmful things. And I said, well, my kids don't eat fast food either. And does that make me anti-food? And he said, oh, I get it. He said, okay, good point. It's you know, you can stand in the knowing that the majority of fast food isn't real food. And you can resist that without being labeled anything except for smart, because you understand that real food is important to fill the body with. Same with vaccines and medicine. If these things are toxic and they still contain toxic chemicals, and if these things are not, it's the collateral damage of most vaccines that's the issue. Another metaphor that was used with another well-known doctor that I talked with, I asked every single doctor, I said, have you seen Plendemic 1? Yes. Is there anything? And I just want to know what you disagree with. Not that you agree with, that you disagree with. I really want to know. Because if there's something I need to go out in the world and correct, I want to do that. Because I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert in this field. And I need to take responsibility for a message that I put out in the world. And all of the doctors said, you know, for the most part, I agree with everything Dr. Mikovits said. There are a few things that she said that I think she shouldn't have been so absolute about, because the science isn't settled, but I can't say she's wrong. And one doctor said, I think you'd be very hard pressed at her to prove her statement that no RNA vaccines fully work. And I said, okay, tell me about that. And he said, well, you know, there are a lot of vaccines, or he said, there are a few vaccines that actually do work for what they're intended for. And I said, okay, well, name those. And he started to name them. And I said, yeah, but doesn't that one have major side effects, isn't there? Oh, they all do. And I said, well, so am I hearing you correctly in that if I break my toe and then I cut off my foot, I've solved the broken toe? And he said, yeah. He said, so it works because you've solved the broken toe, but now you have a foot problem. And I said, so Can we really say that that works? I know that there's always a risk with medicine, but shouldn't we all take a stand for making sure that, there's less, at least less collateral damage? And the majority of the collateral damage that most vaccines cause is a damage to our natural immune system. And I believe personally, this is my statement, me going out on a limb here to say that I think that's part of the agenda for some people. Because the weaker our immune systems are, the more we need synthetic medicines. The more we understand the resilience and the brilliance of our own bodies, and we return to respecting this intelligence that we call nature, and understand that we're actually designed to endure the ever-expanding evolution of our environment, whether that be good or bad. Our bodies will adapt in the same way that, you know, that the species have adapted to grow webs on their toes and fingers to you know, live in water. Like, we will adapt to anything. But if we're constantly telling our immune system that we don't need it, that we have this thing that we ingest that does the work for it, the immune system then takes a vacation. And then we are in serious trouble moving forward. Then we need vaccines for everything, because now our immune system has just gone, you know, gone to Mexico. And so we really need to take a deeper look at that game that's being played that weakens our immune system, and come back into understanding and asking questions like, why, and perhaps you've heard this and I haven't, so you can help me with this. All of our pandemic health experts, out of all of them that have, you know, gone to the podium to speak, I have not heard one of them tell us any of the multiple infinite ways to strengthen our natural immune system. I haven't heard them talk about the importance of exercise, only to limit exercise. I haven't heard them talk about, you know, vitamins, minerals, the importance of sunlight, vitamin D, organic food, beyond organic food, real food grown from the earth. I haven't heard them say any of this. It's been almost an opposite protocol that has been pushed at us, which makes me very suspicious of these people. Because you would think the 101, the first thing that these intelligent doctors who have gone to school for a decade or plus would come out and say, first of all, people, here are the steps that you must do if you're going to be in quarantine to stay healthy and to beat this thing. But instead, we're trapped into our homes watching fear porn 24/7, which is scientifically proven to lower our immune system, the stress that it causes. So we're being given this prescription that is the antithesis of what we need to hear right now. So if you've heard them say anything that I've missed, I'd love to hear it.
I think the right word you used
there was prescription. You know, we are conditioned as humans in the current age to go to our doctors, and they give us solutions to our problems, you know, and it usually comes in the form of a pill. And that's this narrative. Talk about controlling the narrative. You know, that's something that's been placed in our brains for the last 50 years. I mean, I remember going to a doctor 15 years ago, and if I had flu symptoms and he didn't give me antibiotics, I would be angry and I'd go to the next doctor. Because, like, in my mind, that was the solution before I really started learning about all these other things. And you're right. Again, what's the solution now? The doctor says put a mask on. The doctor's going to give you a vaccine. The doctor's even going to prescribe you these other things, hydroxychloroquine. But again, you're right. It never, no one even has said exercise, diet, stop smoking, stop drinking, vitamin D, all these things that could jack up your immune system beyond proportion. And yet we're worried about this little thing over here. No, I haven't heard anything different. The only thing here is our prime minister here says he's trying to lose some weight. That's the one thing that we've heard, but it gets quickly lost. So, no, I'm glad you brought that up. And again, there's a lot of great points that you make here. And towards the end of the film, it really all comes together. And, you know, I'm curious what you saw in the Politico. And I'm wondering some of the things and the points that were raised that so far have come back to you. And I'm curious, do you have some things that you kind of want to rebut and retort from what came in the film and what people have been saying?
Yeah, sure. I'll just skim through one little point here. So this is how tricky PolitiFact and a lot of the other fact checkers are. So they disputed the claim that in partnership with MIT, Bill Gates has developed a new technology that allows vaccines to be injected under your skin along with your medical records. So they say we rated a similar claim mostly false. So first of all, we related a similar claim mostly false. So they start with that. Right away you go, why don't they relate this claim? You know, so now they can have that get out of jail free card with, we were inaccurate here, but we're talking about another claim. And so already it's fishy. And then they go through to basically say, but nobody reads the fine print. They just go, false. They look at the meter. False, true. Okay, good. Let's move on. And then they basically go on to say that everything I said was true. They say, you know, that the Gates Foundation has contributed funds to this research, and Gates has said he supports the idea of a national tracking system to monitor the virus that causes COVID-19. But Willis's claim lacks two pieces of context. First, the MIT study began in July 2016, more than 3 years before the first novel coronavirus cases emerged. It was not inspired by the current outbreak. I didn't say it was. I simply said he's involved in this in this technology, right? So right away they conflate something that I didn't say with it, so they can then, you know, point towards something inaccurate. And then they said, and the second is, there is no evidence that it has anything to do with monitoring Americans specifically. I didn't say it did. And so they throw in these words, so then they're able to say mostly false, when I didn't say any of that. These are the two points they said that they have an issue with, and I didn't say either of them. Go back and watch the movie and you'll see. And then they say we reached out to Willis and Rose, who founded the platform that hosted Plandemic 2, but we haven't heard back from them. So the movie premiered Pacific Standard Time at 10 a.m., which means it ended at 11:30 a.m. This thing went out at probably noon, and so they expected us to get back to them within an hour. And so they only go to mention these points because then it makes us seem that we're evading them. And so this is just one example of how they do these things. The things that we've caught, I could have made an entire movie on, because I had a research team at one point. I just said, in general, just send me every example of where the fact checkers have gotten it wrong. And I received so much information that I just had to cherry pick and find a couple, you know, that we could expose in the film, because it could have gone for hours, you know, of the way that they will literally twist. They'll add these, you know, words or statements or things that have nothing to do with the actual thing they're debunking, so that they can then, when they get called out on it, if they do, which rarely happens, they can say, oh no, we were talking about that. And so it's a real twisted and dirty game that they play. And I just hope that if anything, when people see Plandemic 2 indoctrination, that they just stop relying on those sources.
You're right, because they take those conclusions,
stick them up to the headline, and they say like six false claims by blah, blah, and then people read that and then they move on, which you kind of talk about in the movie. What do you make of Facebook's behavior? I mean, they were really, they preemptively struck, I think, on this. They were really active yesterday in banning the URL. I know we gave them some time, and look, I appreciate, you know, you and your producer, Eric, kind of allowing us to kind of let people know that this was coming a few days early, which gave them time. There was an even article written by BuzzFeed that said this was different this time because they knew they had a couple days knowing the premiere was going to happen, whereas last time, Plandemic 1 just kind of went viral before people had a chance. You know, what do you make of Facebook, you know, preemptively striking? Do you think they looked so bad last time that they wanted to make an example of this so they couldn't be called out? Or what do you think is happening with that platform?
Yeah, you know, that's it's unfortunate because I've only used Facebook. And so all of my audience and friends are on Facebook. I don't have an Instagram account, not even Twitter. And now I don't even use Facebook at all because, you know, it's very rare that I'll post something these days. Just because of that, because and I understand they're under immense pressure. You know, the gatekeepers of free speech and their sponsors, you know, make very serious real threats for them to follow orders. And I understand that they're under that kind of pressure, but at what point are they going to actually take a stand and just, you know, look away from the temptation of that dark money and just let people share their perspective? Because I think that at the crux of it all is something that we need to pay attention to, and that is, it's very evident that these tech platforms, the politicians, and the people that actually are in control of the narrative think that the American people and beyond are not smart, are stupid. You know, that we need to be told that we're not smart enough to be able to look at a situation, and it's actually becoming true, because the more we follow the leader, the more we just put our faith in their hands without questioning. And I want everyone to question that. I'm okay with people. I don't want people to listen to me and follow what I say, which I actually want to get into in a moment of why I chose the ending of the movie that I did, which has rattled some people, because they were expecting a call to action, action steps. And David Martin actually, in his interview, gave some great action steps. And I was left at this point of going, I really want to put those in the movie, but that would then be me thinking for the people and telling them what to do. And I don't want to do that. I actually want to leave people in this discombobulated state of what next? And so the only thing you see on the screen at the end is the definition of plan and the actual original meaning of the word demic, which is people, population. So what is the plan of the people? You as a person, what is your plan? I don't want to. I actually had written what I thought was a really great call to action at the end. And I just decided to leave it out, because I want to leave people in that place of going, what next? Well, great question. Why don't you tell me what's next? Because that's the mindset that we have to get into here. Don't follow me. Don't follow anyone. Don't follow any of these people. We were all born with such a greater intelligence than we've been allowed to actually utilize. That we need to activate that now. Because, you know, we all have the ability to detect what's real and what's not. But it, just like the medicines do to our immune system, following these leaders have done to our ability, our own internal guidance system. It goes to rest and it says we don't need to look anymore, because these people are Democrats, so I trust them. These people are Republicans, so I trust them. Instead of going case by case, moment by moment, listening carefully. And if anything that we need to learn how to do again, it's listen to each other. Because it's one thing we're not doing out there. Just listen deeply. Question everything. And then let's do the work to find our own truths. And so that, for me, the ending was just like, I want to leave people in a place of what's next. Great. That's the question we all need to be asking. What's next? And how long are we going to allow other people to author the direction of our lives? When are we going to put the pen in our hands and say, no, this is what I came here as the author of my life, my story, my destiny, my dreams. And let me take control. Let me take the wheel of this experience. You know, it's because it's been hijacked. Our destinies have been hijacked. And we got to get that.
Yeah, and I
appreciate how you did that at the end. And it was noticeably missing, you know, as you fade into the black. You know, everyone wants to be told what to do. You know, we're so used to being told what to do, you know, and it really reminded me of the conversations I've had here with David Icke. And, you know, you can love him or hate him, but at the end of it, the reason I love David is because at the end of his message, he says, you make the decision, and make a decision out of love and not fear. And that's why I always know that he doesn't have an agenda, because everybody with an agenda wants you to make their decision usually out of fear or hatred, right? That's usually what cult leaders do or governments do. You know, that's usually what it is. If you look down to it, it's they're the bad guy, you better do this. And so whenever someone says the opposite, like David does and you did with this film, you make the decision, don't trust me, do your research, and try to make it out of love or some type of guidance in a better future. I always want to follow those people, you know, because those are the people you want to be hanging around with. And so I appreciate you doing that, because it would have been really easy to do something else.
It would have been, yeah. And I had to fight my own temptation. I'm still weeding the soy out of my system, if you know what I mean by that. After you know decades of fighting a certain fight and being a what I would say would be a far left activist, there's a certain part of me that has graduated into the center of being able to see the imbalance, and so there's still a part of me that you know easily succumbs to this formula of wanting to you know teach and advise the people. You know, the kind of the self-help world that I was in for 20 some odd years. And I ran into a lot of that through this process of where people were trying to tell me how to market the film and the funnels and what to do and, you know, the sales funnels and marketing. And I just, there's part of me that just, I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to do any of that. Why don't we just be authentic and trust? You know, because that's another important word for us to come back into, you know, because we've lost trust. We've lost trust in the intelligence of nature. We've lost trust in each other. We've lost trust in ourselves. And so I kept saying that in the office here. Let's just trust. Let's just trust that if we work from a place of as pure as we can be as these, you know, these flawed instruments, as pure as we can be, that we can just stand in honesty and keep telling what we believe to be true and doing our best to make sure that it is accurate. And then trust the outcome, whatever may come from it, the harsh hatred that comes with it, which, you know, I just want to say to the people out there, the people who have accused me and you and Dr. Michalowicz and Rashid Buttar and all these other people of doing what we're doing for money and fame, there are easier ways to get money and fame. I mean, this is not the way you do it. And there's a lot of money that I could make if I was willing to be in Hollywood and to play the game of Hollywood. I could be on salary with a studio and have a very plush life and work very little hours and have the big house in the gated community. And I don't. I have a 2-bedroom home with my wife and my 2 kids. We live very modestly. We lost everything in a fire 2.5 years ago. Our home, our business, our cars, everything. And it was the biggest blessing of our lives because it allowed us to, you know, just like 9/11, to look at what's important. And we found that what's important is each other, our friends, our family. And we just work from there, do our best to work from there. And so it's made it easy for me to resist the temptation of all of these offers of how to capitalize on our attention that we're receiving. And all along the way, I've thanked people for their advice, but I just said, we don't really want to go there. Oh, but you don't understand. If you went here, you could get 1 million likes and you could do this and you could start your own platform and you could, and I said, I understand that all that would, you know, help to get messages out there, but I don't want to create what we're creating into that intention. If these things happen organically, fine. But let's just focus on our job, our task at hand, which is to do our best to articulate what's really happening in the world that could potentially help us reform our global health systems such that we can come back into a place of relying on the systems that we were born with more and less on the drugs that have addicted our family members and have killed people that we love.
So what happens from here, Mickey? What do the next couple weeks of your life look like? How do you think this will play out? And then what's next for you in the next year or so?
Well, you know, again, we're just rolling with it. We're moving. We're moving out of California. We're on that exodus train. And so we have a few things, you know, logistically in our life to take care of. Finding good places for our kids to be and finding places that have good education and sanity, to be perfectly honest with you. I was born and raised in California, and it's been a real tough thing to witness its decline, its rapid decline. And it just continues to get worse here. And so we, like so many others, are looking for the next place to go. And so we'll be doing that in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. And how, Mickey? Yeah. Worse. What do you mean?
In terms of the decline of California?
Yeah.
What things that first come to mind when you think about that?
political policies that have literally, it's when you look at the territories that have pushed these lockdowns, that have pushed small businesses out of business, that have been so callous in their policies that they have not thought about the lives of the people and how they're going to be affected. Our governors here, the politicians here, the uneducated decisions that they've been making that are really destroying the lives of a lot of people. To watch San Francisco, which used to be my stomping grounds as a teenager because I was born and raised in Sacramento, and San Francisco was a place we'd go to party on the weekends and go to see bad, you know, heavy metal hair bands, and to see what's happening on the streets of San Francisco. I've had, before we moved out of LA, I had offices in downtown Los Angeles to watch the rapid expansion of what at one time was called Skid Row and then expanded everywhere, to see tent cities popping up everywhere, even where I live now, to see, motorhomes parking on sides of roads, you know, dozens of motorhomes that just found a free place to park and they park until they're kicked out. These are people without homes right now. And I would love to stay and fight for my city, for my state, but at this point I have to think about my children first. And I can't force them to endure the policies and the stuff that's happening right now. The amount of fear. I don't want my kids to be out in the street seeing people in so much fear. My wife and I just bought. We're now gun owners. When I used to be, I wouldn't say anti-gun, but against it. And now everyone's going, wow, I guess there's a reason to actually own a gun right now. And it's like when you understand that there are, riots happening, and these riots are vowing to come into urban cities and to urban neighborhoods. And, these are real things that we all have a potential of experiencing in the very near future. And these groups are being funded by the worst people on the planet and being empowered by the media and by certain politicians that just keep telling them that, literally bailing them out of jail when they get caught for enacting terrorist actions. And to see that kind of stuff happen is enough for me and a lot of people to just pack up and go. And so, that's why I'm making this decision, because we it's all around us, and I feel for the people that are homeless. I really feel for the people that are the incredible amount of mental health issues that were already occurring that are now double, triple, quadruple because of this lockdown. It's driving people mad. And when you live in a place that empowers that, what do I say other than, you just got to get the hell out.
Yeah. I appreciate you
saying that. I mean, I'm from San Diego, California. And so I lived there for 18 years before I went off to college, and I told my dad the other day, I said, I never thought I'd say this, Mickey. If I moved back to the States, I would not live in California, period. Just by watching everything that's happening, I couldn't live there. And I would have never thought I would have said that ever in my life. I've lived in L.A. I've spent some time in San Francisco. My sister lives there. But, man, I just wouldn't. So I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm glad you articulated that. And I'm glad you're moving. I think it makes sense.
Well, there was a time when I was very baffled, because I had learned through the environmental work that we had done, I'd learned that there were some, various states that had made it illegal, or at least limited through law, for people to do things like to catch rainwater, to have their own water, to be off grid, to have your own power sources. And I really thought, like, if we're really enduring a climate catastrophe and power outages, power issues and potential water shortages coming, why wouldn't these actions be encouraged globally? Shouldn't we all be catching our own rainwater and learning permaculture techniques that actually allow for less water usage and the better way of interacting with our environment? Shouldn't this be the thing that we're all focused on? It seems like they just want more tax money from us instead of actually focusing on these things that can solve the problem. And now I understand why. When you understand who owns some of the power companies, like, I believe it's the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers that own all of the power companies that fuel much of California, one of the groups. I just heard this recently, so fact check me on this one, please. But when you understand that they bought into all of these power sources, like anything that affects our lives, and then you see the local mayors and governors say, if you're a small business and you return to work, we will shut off your water and power. At that point, I went, oh, that's why they don't want us to have that sovereign, independent ability to be off-grid, because now they can control our water and our power. And that's what they've done. And I watched my own state threaten this upon its small business owners, people that know they're hanging on a thread. And if they stay locked down for one more week, they're done. And they can't open because they'll either be arrested, fined, or their water and power will be shut off. That's some authoritarian, draconian, really harsh reality that we need to pay close attention to for the people out there who are still stuck in the narrative that this could never happen here. All you need to do is look very closely at what's happening now in China and know that that is the model, that is the prototype, that is the blueprint that is being brought now to the United States and to Europe and to all other territories. That is what they want. And if you think that's just a conspiracy theory, you will know otherwise very, very soon, because it's happening rapidly right now in front of us.
Yeah, we've been talking about that
a few months here. That specifically, actually. What's the next film project, Mickey? I know it's the worst thing to ask somebody who just finished a film.
Well, yeah, the next project is we're going to swing back to some of the things that we were producing with the narrative. And this is something that actually came to me in 2006, and I've been really anxious to produce a film of this nature. I, like yourself, had very intense experiences with the medicine known as ayahuasca, and went to the jungle and did all of that. And as you know, it's life-changing. And things happen. You see things that you normally wouldn't see with your own mind and eyes. And so in one of those experiences that I had, which was incredibly profound, I don't do the work any longer, which is the beauty of that work is, you know, it's not an addictive thing, but you do it until you get clear on what your path is, and then you stop. And so one of the things that I got from the depth of one of those experiences is that there's a way to use the media. The terminology that I was given was medicinal media. That media actually has the potential, through all of its different forms that it touches. I mean, when you think about just the word media, what it encompasses is visuals, sound, frame rate, colors, vibration technologies. You can, you know, through sound, it's been proven that a lot can happen to the body just through certain frequencies of sound technology. I won't go too deep into that, but it's something that I've been very intrigued by for a number of years. And so I started to really look at this of like, what does that mean, medicinal media? Can media actually affect the body? Because of course it can affect our emotions. And if our emotions affect our body, then the media that we experience is medicinal in that way. It makes us cry. It makes us laugh. It makes us angry. And so what if we're able to put these things together in such a formula that would, in the same way that medicines are formulated to trigger certain chemicals in the body, what if we started to look at deeper at the promise of media, that it could perhaps create a medicinal effect in people? And so one of the things that we've been working on since 2008 is to deeply explore this. We've been working with a lot of technologists, very brilliant people who have been really showing us all the different ways that through the senses, the body can be affected and activated. And so the next step is for us to experiment with some of these technologies, but just to the degree of doing, within the film, we're going to do live exercises. We're going to do experiments. And so, you know, there's all these models that we have looked at through the past that we're all aware of human experiments that have helped us to better understand how we react and respond and what it takes to actually get people in action. And so a lot of the next project is not only going to pull back the curtain on further deep conversation into how we got here, more importantly, how we get out. But we're going to turn the mirror of reality on ourselves so that we can say in real time, we can show people. I'll give you one quick example of an experiment that my friend Jason Silva did in a TV show that he hosts. Yeah, you know Jason. So, you know, the experiment was in his Brain Games show. There's a waiting room of people that would come into the waiting room, like a doctor's appointment, and a buzzer would go off every few moments, and everyone were actors, and except for one or two people, and everyone would stand up every time the buzzer went off. And then a buzzer would go off, and they'd sit down again. And until the new people, for no reason, would start to stand up and sit down. After all the actors were gone and called in the room, the new people, not knowing why, would still stand up and sit down every time the buzzer would go off. And so these kind of human experiments to show people how susceptible we are to suggestion is going to be a great part of the film, because I think we're inundated with information and data at this point. And so just pushing more data at people isn't the answer, but it's to actually show us the way our own thinkers work and how they've been manipulated to work in a certain way so that they can be controlled. And so it's really to break free from the matrix of that so that we can, you know, have our own freedom of thought again. And so that is, in a long question to your short answer, the plot of the next film is we're going to tackle that subject, which I'm incredibly excited to jump into.
Wow, that's going to be excellent.
Let me ask you, you know, this current film goes pretty hard on Bill Gates. And I'm wondering, do you ever worry with a man like that with so much money and so much power, surrounded by so many people with a vested interest in his power and his money, that you'll ever get blowback somehow or repercussions when you do that?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's a reality. And I will say that a lot of the doctors that I interviewed, some of them didn't want to go on camera. And a lot of them said, especially the doctors in the third world countries that I interviewed in Africa and in India and so forth, some of them were willing to talk to me on the phone. And I would ask all of them, I would say, wow, what you're saying right now is so profound. I want to honor you by not recording any of this, but I would ask that, could we turn the Zoom on right now? And I'd love to get just that statement. And a lot of them would say, I can't. It's just too dangerous. Bill Gates is a very powerful man, and I live in a very vulnerable country. And I just can't take that risk for the safety of my family and my job and everything else. And I understand that. And, you know, but there's an awareness that we have to have that these people have a lot of money. And so far, they're only attacking us by, you know, smears in the media. But should something come later on, you know, at this point in my life, you know, I'm open to all possibilities, and it won't stop me. And I am going to stand here regardless. And all they need to start realizing is that the further you try to silence guys like you and myself, the bigger voice you give us. And so if they really want to play smart, you know, which if you look at even the situation, you mentioned Robert Kennedy Jr. early on, and the as vocal as Robert Kennedy Jr. has been against Bill Gates, don't you think that if what Robert Kennedy has been saying was inaccurate, that by now Bill Gates would have sued him? But see, they don't want to do that because it forces us to go into a discovery process. And through the discovery process, through the law, is when all of these things that they've buried will come to surface. And so, you know, they don't really use the law to fight us. They use dirty tricks. And I've already experienced a lot of them. And so if they're listening right now, you can continue doing what you're doing. I have a very, very serious dead man switch that will be triggered at the moment if anything happens to me. I learned that from all my whistleblower friends. And so it will only do them greater harm. But in the meantime, I'm just going to keep telling the truth as best I can. And you know, I want to be clear that there's points when I get very angry. The more I learn about what these people have done, the more I see their bold-faced lies, the more I see them step up in front of the cameras and say something that we have absolute evidence that we know they're lying through their teeth, that Anthony Fauci is lying through his teeth. When we have him on camera, on record, saying wonderful things about hydroxychloroquine 10, 12 years ago. And then to say what he says now, that it's anecdotal and unproven. You know, when you see the depth of lies they're willing to tell the American people and allow people to die, it makes you angry. But I've had to harness a lot of that anger and to realize that to operate from there is not the highest place to operate from. I only want the game to be exposed so they stop. I'm not trying to bring any great harm to any of these people that are involved. I just hope they can take their billions of dollars and do better things with them.
Yeah, I think that's super important point. I don't think you ever create great art or great change through anger, you know, or hatred or vilification. I don't think that ever works. And I'm glad you didn't do that in this film. And it is really noticeable. So I appreciate you for that. And again, it's funny, I put posted yesterday when we were getting attacked, you know, the malicious attacks, that this ain't our first rodeo here. And so luckily, I've been the subject of tons of ridicule, tons of banning and censorship this year. So a bit like you, like, I'm used to this, you know, so all the articles are coming out now. I mean, we already saw that a few months ago, being threatened with your platforms. You know, it's never nice to know that 9 years of your work and 250 million views and 8,000 videos that have literally changed millions of people's lives are about to be deleted. It's not nice, but I've also made peace with it, and we're moving forward. And when I'm collaborating with great people like you and all the great people we've had on the show, I feel great that we're moving forward. And, you know, people stop me on the streets. I just went to the gym about an hour ago, Mickey, and all the guys there are coming up to me saying, man, we really appreciate what you do. We were watching the live stream, and they're like, don't think that the policies in here reflect what we think. We know what's going on. And I was like, look, I understand where you're at. And so many people really appreciate the work that's being done. I think you know that, but I hope you know that.
I hope you know that, Brian, too, because it's been a real incredible thing to witness your evolution and the process of the rapid growth of the, you know, your platform and your willingness to risk it all to have certain people like David Icke and certain people that are the ones that can trigger a complete shutdown of technology. Your willingness to stand there boldly, and it's also been awesome to watch your own positions and beliefs transform on camera. That's been an awesome thing to witness, you know, because it's been very honest. You began very skeptical, which you should be. And as you hear more and more of the facts from more and more intelligent people, you've shown a very open heart and open mind. And that seems to be a rare thing these days, especially for someone in your position that are, you know, a lot of people that are hosting interviews do their best to appease all sides and never to say anything that could threaten their sponsors or people like that. But I think the outcome of you remaining so independent and having a people-powered platform is that it allows you to not have to succumb to someone else's narrative. And so I know what you have to go through to hold your position of openness, and it takes a great deal of courage, and it takes a really good person to be able to do that. And so, you know, the same kudos extends to you, my friend.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate you saying that. And I just had a recollection to one of my martial arts instructors who I trained with for about 8 years. And I remember he said to me, he said, Brian, you learn a lot about yourself when you get into a fight. And I didn't know what he was talking about until he threw me in the ring, you know, or threw me on the mat with someone. And you realize, you know, where you show up when you didn't know if you'd show up. You realize where you don't when you didn't know if you would. And so these past 4 months have really shown me what my beliefs really are. You know, I never knew how strongly I believed in this stuff because it wasn't ever tested before. You know, I've been broadcasting for 9 years. I never had a single video pulled, censored, banned, deleted. And so it showed me what I'm all about. And it's been nice to know where I stand and what I'm willing to fight for. And like you said, for people that don't know, I mean, Mickey, you're probably referring to that first interview with Icke this year on March 18th, where I said flat out to his kind of bewildered face that I believe in vaccines and I'm going to take one if they create one. And I said that, and it's still on record, and that video is still up there. And then as I learn more about, you know, listening to Robert Kennedy and listening to Judy and listening to, Tenpenny and watching your stuff, I just became more educated to where, again, I'm not an anti-vaxxer by no means. Like, I'm that anti-fish, as Robert would say, and I'm the anti-food, as I love your analogy. I just am looking at the nuance of the science, and I'm making an intelligent decision for myself and my kids and my dad, who's in his 70s. And it just, the risk reward is questionable. And I think that's what we need to think about. So, and again, I've also been super fortunate, Mickey, to have this army around the world. I mean, 36,000 people that would donate to create this platform. And the fact that we never had sponsors on this show. So I never had to even think twice. So that's been a beautiful thing. And, you know, lastly, I would just say that all these fears we live in our world, you know, that they make us live these quiet lives of desperation sometimes. You know, they make us play small. And when you go test those fears, you realize they're these phantoms sometimes. And so sometimes that thing you think you're going to lose, you know, your YouTube channel. If you had told me a year ago I might not have a YouTube channel anymore. I mean, I got the gold button on the wall, you know. We're about to hit 2 million subscribers. It's 90-some percent of our entire business. If you told me that was going to be gone, I would have, you know, my heartbeat would have skipped. But now I'm realizing that there'll be life after that. And I would so much rather, like you say, know who my friends are and have great friends, you know, out there supporting me and know who's not supporting me than have a bunch of people that are, you know, that say, oh yeah, we kind of like what you do. So I'd rather know who's behind us.
Right.
So it's been a great time. Mickey, final thoughts for people here, for those that have watched the movie or still haven't watched the movie, final thoughts on the film, which you've just created, which you should be really proud of.
Yeah, thank you. You know, one thing that I definitely want to say directly to the people, there's some confusion online that somehow I think that the virus is not real. And I want to make that very painfully clear right now that the virus is real. There's a real virus out there and it's harming people. And if you are one of the people who have suffered in some way directly or through your loved ones, I feel deeply sorry for your loss, for your struggle, for your pain, whatever you've experienced. We're not fighting against that or denying what you've experienced. The virus is real. The pandemic is manufactured. That's what we need to look at very, very deeply here. And so please don't confuse our unveiling of the pandemic with a narrative that we don't believe that it's real and that we don't care about the people who've been harmed. I care deeply about that. And so I want to make that point very, very clear. And now all we do, Brian, is to trust, as I said earlier. We are going to keep the platform alive, yours, ours. Ours has been attacked left and right. It's up and down and up and down. And right now it's up, I understand. My producer's back there, Eric, saying it's up. And so that's a good thing. But we also have a lot of other avenues that the film's going to be rolled out into over the course of the next week. And it will continue to be seen. It will continue to grow. And we also have 11 or 12 languages that the film is now being subtitled in so we can get it out to other countries. And so that will all happen in the course of the next week or week and a half as well. And so I just ask people out there to share Plandemic Part 2 Indoctrination. Share it far and wide. Be willing to stand in the fire, the scrutiny, the pushback that will come with it. It is an incredible opportunity. You got to step out of, I know how much it sucks to open up your Facebook or your Instagram or your Twitter and to see negative comments against something you've posted. I know that hurts and sometimes it sets our day off on the wrong tone. But we have to be willing to endure that in this stage right now. I mean, it's part of the sacrifice that we make for comfort. You know, we're so addicted to comfort. It's time for us to get uncomfortable right now and to be willing to stand for what, at the very least, what you believe to be true. Stand in that and don't engage in the fighting or any of that. And quite frankly, if somebody is too rude or won't listen, block them. Get rid of them. You know, because it's your friend page or your platform. That's not shutting out free speech. That person still has their own platform and their ability to share their slander in the world. But if you don't want it on your page, then you have the right to shut that down. If somebody's being too hostile and is not willing to engage in debate and to look at actual science. But other than that, you know, I think it's time for us all to be courageous and to stand together and at you know, most importantly, to listen to each other, because this thing that has been perpetrated on all of us, this illusion of, you know, left and right, that there are sides, that there are different, you know, things just keep being dissected into these smaller and smaller categories. I remember I had a gay brother, which I also will say that my motivation for doing all of this, I completely failed to mention, was that my brother died of bad AIDS treatments. 23 days later, my mom died of bad cancer treatments, and I was in my early 20s. And so this is really at the foundation of what motivates me. And we've all lost loved ones. We've all dealt with people who've been addicted to opioids and other incredible, you know, illnesses due to these, you know, big pharma, their drugs. But it's time for us to stand together as people. You know, we have to start looking at this like it's an organism. And within every organism, there's cells. And right now, all the cells have been divided into all these categories. I mentioned my brother because back then when I was growing into, you know, whether someone was gay or straight or whatever, it was a very easy thing to get behind. It was you're gay, straight, or bisexual. And then it's gay, straight, transgender, bisexual, LGBTQ+. All of that is by design, is to divide us up. And now you have all those groups infighting. So what used to be a one large group that had power, they're now infighting and disagreeing with each other. And that's the game they play. And so we have to be aware and vigilant that we're being divided in the same way, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever it might be, white, black, brown, whatever. And just to start, you know, coming back into celebrating the fact that we're all human, the foundation, and to start seeing the true enemies out there, because we do have enemies out there that are working against us and against our evolution. And we have to identify who they are so we can stand together as the people, and then we'll overcome this. I actually believe no matter what, we're going to win these battles. There's a lot of battles being waged right now, and without a doubt, we're going to win all the ones that matter. But the only way that we can do that is by stopping pushing against people that are actually trying to expose the agenda out there, and to at least listen to each other. And so if nothing else, I just ask that people listen, watch the film and listen to it, consider it, and then do your own homework and make your own decision. That's all we can ask for right now.
It's great advice. And again, I encourage people to have a conversation in real life with someone and look into their eyes and listen and debate these things. And don't do it online where you can cancel someone, and you know, everything digital can divide us right now. I completely agree with that. And I've had so many guests that say exactly what you just said, Mickey, that if you take a step back, a lot of these events of the last few months are doing exactly that. They're dividing us, getting us into a fear state, and that way we can't take any action against the bigger picture stuff that's happening. And thankfully we have documentaries like yours to hopefully get us to kind of wake up. But if we don't move out of love and trust, then there is no chance. But I am optimistic. And I always ask people, what are you going to tell your grandkids 30, 40 years from now? What did you do in the great pandemic of 2020? What did you do? And you want to give them an answer, you know? You want to give them an answer. I did something. I did something. I braved this. I had a conversation with someone I didn't want to have. I researched this. I spoke out about this. You know, that's what you want to tell them, I think. Show them how you contributed. But you didn't necessarily, you know, hole yourself up inside and do whatever you're told. You know, I think you want to be able to have done more than that. And so I agree. Let's get this movie out there. There's so many places to share it. If they're watching this now on the Digital Freedom Platform, I'm sure there's a link below, or freedomplatform.tv/movie. They can share it. They can also download the movie right there and share it out on whatever platform or channel you're on or Telegraph group. It's also been split up into 16 different pieces, so you can put a piece on your social media or whatever else you want to use. Just, you know, do it at your own, you know, at your own risk. But again, it's worth getting all this stuff out there, and let's continue the narrative, and I think it's really important. So, look, Mickey, I just want to say it's been just amazing dealing with you and your team. Eric Felderhoff's an amazing guy to work with, and so are you. Yeah. And talk about trust. I mean, we just had to really trust each other to pull this whole thing off in a massive way. And I think that's a display of how we can work together in the future. You know, I mean, we've never met, and yet we just knew that we would just trust each other in the process and make this incredible thing happen, which we did. So it's been powerful, man, and I really appreciate you, the film you made, and everything you're doing out there. So, again, thank you, Mickey.
Likewise. Yeah. Thank you so much for your support and your courage. Really, really appreciate who you are, and I look forward to many more collaborations.
I look forward as well. This has been epic. Again, congratulations on the film. Really an incredible piece of work. I watched it and I was like, wow, man. I'll be honest. I thought hopefully I can work with you someday to learn your filmmaking techniques, because I could learn a lot from you, and hopefully we can do something together in the future, or I can just learn from you. So congratulations. Take a breather now, and let's let the world digest this. And let's see how this ripples throughout. But I know it's going to be positive. I'm optimistic as well. So there you go. Let's do this conversation next time in person, shall we?
Yes, we shall. And to everyone who's been supportive of the Plandemic series, thank you. Thank you very much. And please don't stop.
All right. Fantastic. There he is, everybody. Mickey Willis. Let's share this movie far and wide. I appreciate all of you. Again, share the link for this interview as well. This has been really epic to see the man behind this entire movement. And thank you all for contributing. I appreciate all of the things that you're doing for us. And we'll see you next time on London Real. Take care.